It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is Lighthouse Faith Podcast, moving forward in truth and love. I'm Lauren Green, Chief Religion Correspondent for Fox News Channel and author of the book Lighthouse Faith. We are in the season where we celebrate some of our most patriotic holidays like Memorial Day or 4th of July. And one question that is asked during these times of pondering the country's origins is America a Christian nation? And of course, if you ask in today's, you know, cancel culture and secular saturated media, the answer, of course, is no. That America was founded by, quote, a chance accumulation of adventurers, religious outcasts who stumbled into assured prosperity because of abundant natural resources. But if you research America's founding documents like the Mayflower Compact and even the Constitution, you will find, as historian Marshall Foster writes, quote, that our nation, its republican institutions, economic prosperity, and individual liberty can only be attributed to the hand of God and the covenant between our founders and their creator. So why isn't that narrative being taught to our children in public schools? Because those who formed the national education system were followers of many of the socialist philosophies that gained ground in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, like those of Karl Marx. If you want to learn the real faith-filled history of America and the founders' presupposed Christian moral foundations, then one of the books you must read is Marshall Foster's The American Covenant, The Untold Story. Dr. Marshall is the founder and president of the World History Institute. It's a nonprofit educational foundation. And the book, The American Covenant, was part of Kirk Cameron's American Campfire Revival 100-day plan. It's filled with vital information you will never learn in today's history books. Never. And Dr. Marshall joins me now. Welcome, Dr. Marshall.
Lauren, it's so good to be with you.
You know, it's amazing when I'm just reading through the book how much I really just didn't know. There's some things I did, but, you know, most things you're not going to be taught in school because there's always a narrative in schools as to what's really the foundational principle here. I mean, there's, like you say in your book, there really is no neutral territory when it comes to religion. You're either, you know, worshiping God or, you know, like you say in your book, the public school system has by default teaches human secularism, you know, which basically is a religion because the Supreme Court said it was. It ruled
sure.
It was.
Sure.
So, but tell me about the American covenant. Explain what this covenant is.
Well, going back in history, really, all nations and all people have been in covenant with God from the beginning. Adam and Eve, Noah, the great covenants of history, Abrahamic covenants, the Mosaic covenant, all the way down to Jesus and the ultimate covenant that was inaugurated through his sacrifice on the cross. But the concept of covenant is a concept of relationship. And when it be related to the founding of nations or governmental documents, it is two people coming together, usually under God, in the case of the Christian religion. And that's what happened with the Mayflower Compact. Right at the beginning of America, America was founded by some religious castaways who literally had no power or influence, thrust out of Europe, and they come into New England. And they're outside of the King's Charter, so they have to write their own form of government. And when they do, they write a compact or covenant. And the covenant is between themselves and God to obey his word and to obey God and also to love one another and to build a constitutional republic. That's actually what they built. So mm-hmm. they followed the biblical construct that was given by Moses of electing representatives and eventually a house and a Senate and having judges elected and then having all these things that we have in our country today were brought over to our country by biblically trained people, many of them persecuted Christians from Europe. And they founded this nation upon a covenant with God, a relationship with God. And that was true in every one of their governmental covenants, their church covenants, and their and their personal covenants. And so this went down for 150 years. I call it the forgotten century. And during that forgotten century, then it built in each of the colonies this form of government that was built on self-government under God. We didn't need a king to rule over us because we were ruling ourselves by the power of God. And the result was that we came up with the Declaration of Independence, which, by the way, is a covenant, is it not?
Yes.
So you get to the end of it, it's stated as a covenant document. It says, with firm reliance upon divine providence, we pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. So they're depending upon God to pledge to one another to obey this covenant. And that's what America was built on. And that was the strength of America. We weren't one group of people, one denomination. We weren't just, or one racial group. That wasn't the concept. The concept was we come together under God and we covenant together to build a nation. And that was so unique in history that it really hadn't been done since the time of the ancient Hebrews.
And what we're going through today is very similar to, I was talking to you before we started the podcast, it's very similar to what Israel underwent when it demanded a king. And when it went to the priest Samuel and said, mm-hmm. we want a king to rule over us. And it's like, you know, why? And he grieved over that because he grieved because he thought that they had rejected him. And God tells him, it's not that they've rejected you, they have rejected me as their God. So they're asking for an earthly king to rule over them. And this is kind of how I see what's happening today in our political world, that people have forgotten God. You look at all the polls and the generations keep falling away from organized religion, but they're not falling away from faith. They're just putting their faith someplace else. And you see this by how much people's sort of faith and religious sort of fervor is put into politics and a political figure. And that's kind of the same kind of scenario, right?
Well, exactly. In fact, that's what God warns in 1 Samuel. He says that if you want to have a king, I'll give you a king, but he's going to run your sons in front of his chariots in wars around the world. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah.
And then, because he's going to be in control. And then he says he's going to put your daughters in his soup kitchens. In other words, the daughters are going to work for the government. And when you put the government in control of employment and in control of wars from the top down, and the people lack their control because they give it over to a king, you're going to have tyranny. And Lauren, the sad story that my book so clearly defines is that in the history of mankind, there's only been about 5% of the people that have ever enjoyed liberty of any kind that we wouldn't even think of as liberty today. The vast majority have lived under these tyrants who have told them what to do, what to believe, how to act, who to marry, and when to die. And we are so spoiled in America, we thought that this is just going to go on and that we can turn our back on the very founder of our great nation and republic, which is God himself, and get by and have our freedom without having our relationship with God. And that is bringing us to ruin.
I want to read something from your book, and you quote the Mayflower Compact, because I want to read this because I don't think many people know, and I didn't know, that the Mayflower participants actually made this compact while they were anchored off the shores of America, before they set foot on America. And this is part of the compact. It says, for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith and honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do these presents solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one of another. It just goes on and on and on. It's just this idea. In the name of God. I mean, the document starts, in the name of God, amen. That's it.
Right. And we covenant together. The next words are, and we covenant together. And so the idea was, now we're going to covenant together to form a form of government. Since we have none, we're in the wilderness, and we have no king out here. So we're going to form our own government, but we don't want to have chaos where we're going to have a one-person democracy where we kill the blondes by having a majority vote. So you want to have a republic, not a democracy. You want to have, it's based upon laws and not upon men. And so whose laws do you choose? And they chose God's law, God's fundamental principles from his word as the foundation for their political establishment. And that was the truth. That is the way America was built. Now, if someone wants to come along and come up with another way in which it was built, you're just lying to the facts.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the way it was built. and the success of it is irrefutable. And to now dump all that, to go for false Marxist theories that can clearly be traced back to the Frankfurt Institute in Germany and Russia in the 1920s, brought into our public school system by John Dewey and the progressive public schools, and how they've rewritten the textbooks and they've rewritten the story of America.
This is something I wanted to talk about. This is very important that people need to understand about the educational system. And I was actually disheartened because I went to Horace Mann Elementary School in Minneapolis. And when I learned sort of about the history of Horace Mann, I was not really pleased, but it made so much more sense of what I was taught in the school because of this background. Now, not everything Horace Mann did was terrible. In fact, most of what he did was really great. But the foundational principles on which he laid the American educational system really was not based on giving honor to God. It was giving honor to sort of humanity. It was a human-centered religion, basically. He was part of the... you're talking about socialism in America. In 1905, the Intercollegiate Socialist Society is kind of created. And what was that, Dr. Foster?
Well, Fabian socialists, they would call themselves in those days, small group that would meet like at Peck's restaurant in New York City. And there'd be few people, Clarence Darrow, some famous lawyers, some famous individuals would meet, and John Dewey later on. And you have the secular humanism movement comes out of this. But they themselves were a small minority at that time, but they dedicated themselves to take their Marxist ideology into the society from the grassroots. They went into the motion picture industry. They went into, the education field through John Dewey, New York University or Columbia Teachers College. And then right on through into our system, they infiltrated their worldview that in 1905, when they met at Peck's restaurant, these five guys, I mean, they would have been laughed out. They would have had tomatoes thrown at them in the street if they would have brought it up. Now it's become the mainstream of American political thought.
And that process was slow.
Generations of education, yes.
But the process was slow. But 1921, they changed the name to the League for Industrial Democracy. By 1930, there's 125 chapters of student study groups that John Dewey was a VP of the League. And John Dewey is in a... He became president of the United States, right? I mean, if I'm getting my history right?
Yeah, no. John, he spent his life in education from...
Right, in education, I'm sorry.
And he became the founder of progressive public schools.
Right, he was the VP of the League. I meant the League for Industrial Democracy.
Yes, right.
He was part of that. And he basically, along with other folks like, you know, Reinhold Niebuhr, who was a socialist theologian, Horace Mann, and others, really created the public educational system. What did they do?
Well, they were able to bring it about by their perseverance and taking their ideas into the academic classrooms. This was at the same time that the Christian community was beginning to withdraw from its cultural leadership. Up until 1900, every leader of every major university had to be a pastor first. Most people don't know that. I think it was 1895 was the first time that a major university in America, public or private, had a president that was not a pastor.
Yeah, because they were formed basically to educate ministers, right?
And to educate people from a biblical point of view. So what happened is that these Marxists moved into these positions of authority. I know this firsthand because 50 years ago, right there at Berkeley, I was with Campus Crusade for Christ. I came out of college and I started teaching and being a minister there on the campus for 9 years at USC and Berkeley and various places. And we were there at Berkeley when the riots were breaking out and they were burning down the administration buildings. And I was there on the platform debating with Jane Fonda about the Marxism when she was coming back from Ho Chi Minh City in 1970. So, I mean, we go back to those days where they founded the SDS and Tom Hayden and all those guys and the little groups of people that were then considered radicals at the campus level. Well, those people have grown up now, and now they're the heads of the universities. They're the headmasters and presidents. And as a result, their philosophy that was in the streets 50 years ago is now in all the positions of our major institutions today.
Well, I want to take a break right now on Lighthouse Faith Podcast, talking with Dr. Michael Foster about the American Covenant. We're going to come back and talk about some other things that are looming for America. We'll be right back.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
All right, we're back on Lighthouse Faith Podcast, talking with Dr. Michael Foster about his book, The American Covenant. And it Dr. Foster, one of the things that that we talk about all the time, and I want to reiterate and rediscuss this, because even though many people know the history of this, there's one element of this that I think was obvious, but not really understood as well. And it's about the separation of church and state and what it actually means. And explain what the First Amendment actually says, and then what it actually means.
Yes, the First Amendment was put in. Remember, the whole Bill of Rights was put in. It wouldn't have had a constitution had they not had a Bill of Rights, because there were so many concerned about the government being too powerful. And so the first of the amendments, and the first thing dealt in these amendments, is the question of religious liberty. And what the First Amendment teaches is that there shall be no establishment of a church state. They did not want the Church of England coming in and becoming controlled by the king and then controlling everybody else.
And they tried.
They wanted religious liberty.
And the British tried actually to do that. They tried to make
it all. They were just saying, we want the church to be free from the state, not the state to be free from the church. That was never their intent. That's been turned around in our time to be interpreted as something called the separation of church and state. That is nowhere to be found in our Constitution. There is no official separation where you can't influence, you can't pray in school, you can't. There's no indication of that anywhere in our document. That's simply a 21st century recreation of the philosophy, trying to say that the religion of secular humanism, which dominates the schools, that's okay to have in the schools. But if you want to have a prayer before a football game, can't do that, because you're bringing God into the issue, right? And so it's just another power play, an attempt to destroy our religious freedom, which was the very purpose of the amendment, was to provide for that freedom.
Yeah, and what's very important, though, and you write this in the book, and a lot of people do know this, that the idea of separation of church and state, this wall of you know, between separating the church and state, came from a personal letter written by Thomas Jefferson in 1802 to Baptists and Congregationalists in Danbury, Connecticut. They were afraid that America was establishing a religion, a state religion, or that one would have power. What I didn't get in that, what you brought out in the book, is that Jefferson was not part of the group writing the Bill of Rights. You know, he was not part of the Constitutional Convention. And yet, the Supreme Court constantly will use it or rely on that to make court decisions, to make rulings. That shouldn't be, right?
Oh, it should have nothing to do with it. And that was never Jefferson's intent anyway. Even when he wrote a personal letter to those Danbury Baptist pastors, he was just trying to encourage them. No, religious liberty is there. We're not going to take away your liberty, because they were always afraid that the state church, which had happened in Europe all the time, would take over and the king would use the church to oppress the people. They didn't want that, but they definitely wanted Christianity. It was in the warp and woof of all of their schools, of all of their teaching. They produced a Bible from the Congress. This was a biblically based nation. Was everybody a Christian? No. But were the founding principles and the founding concepts of every one of our institutions built upon the Judeo-Christian tradition? Absolutely. And that is what made us great, Lauren. And to give that up is the thing that's going to cause us to lose the country. So we're pleading with people to come back and learn this great truth. And as we do, if millions of us will heed the call, then we can peacefully restore the country.
What is the 1619 Project? A lot of people probably have heard of this. I have heard of this, and I kind of loosely understand what it is. But what is it about?
Oh, put together from a book from a lady, Zinn, I believe. But it really comes out of the New York Times, and it's the New York Times version of the founding of America, which is turning America from the very beginning into a racist country, saying that in 1619, as there were some Dutch traders that came in with a few slaves in 1619 into the Virginia colony. That was a year before the Mayflower was signed up in New England. That was far north. This was in the little struggling, almost dead colony in Virginia called Jamestown. And yes, it was a terrible thing. That was the initiation of slavery, which then caught hold through the 18th century, as we know, and caused a great civil war. So we know that's true. But what they've done is they've taken that one event and they've made all of American history, including the founding of our country in 1776, nothing but a racist attack where white men wanted to control the world. And so they put together a document like the Declaration or the Constitution, which protected only white men. This is absolutely not true. In fact, those documents were breaking forever the bondage of having racial or identity politics by stating in their very beginning in the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. That one statement is not found anywhere in Europe at the time. You certainly wouldn't find it in Asia and Africa or anywhere else. It was founded upon the Christian concept that all men are created equal and we're equal before God, and God is without partiality. And that's what it began. Did they live it out completely? Did they have to deal with the slave issue that was brought to them in that generation? Yes. Did it take a while to deal with? Too long? Yes. Did we have to fight a civil war? Yes. But was that all that is America? No. America was built on a basic fundamental greatness of these biblical principles of liberty that came from Christianity, not from the Enlightenment. You didn't get it out of the French Revolution, which was a bunch of murderous thieves who came in and raped and pillaged the people and brought on the dictatorship of Napoleon. Our country was built on none other but a Christian foundation.
Yeah, and you're talking about in the book, from you actually quote Tom Holland, historian Tom Holland. It says to live in a Western country is to live in a society still saturated by Christian concepts and assumptions. And a lot of the ideas that people get about God, that God is love, is about a God of love. Well, where do you get that idea? I heard Pastor Tim Keller talk about the ideas, like, where do you get this idea that God is a God of love? I mean, people who don't, you know, who don't have any organized religion, they eschew it. He says, where do you get this concept of God as a God of love? And he says, you're not getting it from nature, because nature is very brutal. I mean, can you get that God is a God of love from the hurricane, from the thunderstorm, from the tornado? No. The only place in any document that says God is a God of love is in the Bible. And so if we understand God as a God of love, how do you know that except from the Bible? And so it really is living out Tom Holland's statement, is that you're saturated by Christian concepts and assumptions, even though you don't even realize it, you know?
That's right. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. It doesn't come out of just anywhere, right?
Yeah.
It comes out of you know, Jesus and the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, that's where we find the first shall be last and the last shall be first. And the whole conception of selfless giving and caring for the poor and the needy and all of those things come from the understanding of the Christian God, who is the God of the universe. So we get back to Him, and we trust Him, and we can restore and rebuild our country.
Yeah, there's a lot of building to do. How do you go forward now? What is the next step that people have to take?
Well, I think we talk a lot about it in our book, The American Covenant, The Untold Story, which, by the way, they can get at Mayflower Institute. That's the first name of our institute. It's the World History Institute. Mm-hmm. Now we've changed our name. But World History Institute, The American Covenant. And in there, in the book, we detail how we can restore our country from the grassroots. It's a basic strategy that was given in Deuteronomy by Moses when the children of Israel were going into the Promised Land. In Deuteronomy 6, he said, you need to know God, love God, train your children in the morning and throughout the day, in the evening. You need to live out hospitality and love for your neighbor. And then you need to reach out to civil government, civil authority at the gates. And you need to help your cities become self-governing. That strategy given by Moses to the children of Israel going in to the new Israel at the time is the same strategy that is seen on the Forefathers Monument in Plymouth that the Pilgrims used. The largest granite monument in America is there. Kirk Cameron and I did a movie on it called Monumental. Mm-hmm. And that monument, 80 tons of granite standing over 80 feet high, overlooking the Mayflower, tells the story of what to do, Lauren. And it's just so simple. It's the same thing. We need to love the God of the Bible. We need to know His word. We need to obey His commandments. Then we need to set up a legal system built upon these just and merciful laws. And then we need to train our children and train them in these principles and train them in the truths of the way the world works. And then we need to have what's called the liberty man. We need to be liberty people, free but willing to defend that liberty. And that story is told on that monument. It's told throughout Scripture. And in the book, we detail all the stories of from Alfred the Great to Patrick of Ireland to all the great heroes of history that have liberated nations. And they have done so following this same grassroots, mm-hmm. basically peaceful strategy to save nations from the inside out.
What the Campfire Revival, American Campfire Revival, this 100-day plan, where can people see that? What happens on these revivals? And this is something that Kirk Cameron and you kind of created. What are they, and what will people learn?
Well, it's wonderful. It's going to be going on. We're not done yet. Actually, Kirk has been a dear friend of mine for 15 years. We've done a lot of things together, but he, on his own, really got in his backyard, started a campfire, and about 120 days ago, he began a commitment. Right, on January 24th, mm-hmm. I'm going to give 100 nights to this, and I'm going to walk through this book, and I'm going to teach America's history. I'm going to have a 100 day plan to save America. And he did it 15, 20 minutes a night right in front of the cameras on Facebook and Instagram. Ended up with 3.5 million followers all over the world. Mm. And he went every night, never missed a night. No matter where he traveled, he was always in front of a campfire. You see it in the back of my book. And he's sitting there doing this. And I was his only guest throughout the time. And we just had a great time. We had such a great response. Then, of course, I came out with his new version of the book and right there in the middle of the campfire. And we've just sold out of copies. But he is now coming back after two or three weeks. He's taken off with his wife and relaxed. He's going to come back and hit it again. And so look forward to that. Go to KirkCameron.com. You can see all of the 100 episodes. And then you can also see the coming episodes on the covenant. He's going to continue with this concept of America can be saved by covenant by going into the family covenant. And he's going to talk about family relationships, husband and wife, but from a covenantal perspective. But he's also going to have Thursday nights. It's going to be like Patriot Night, and we're going to continue on this study of American government from a covenantal position or a Christian position.
And you said but
we're going to be continuing the program. It's going to start this summer and right on through the fall every night.
You said something very, very important, which is the idea of family. And one of the things that the founding fathers and really even generations up until probably maybe 10 or 15 years ago really believed was that the family, the nuclear family of, mom, dad, and the kids was the foundation and the sort of the holding together of communities, that the first line of defense for a child to learn morality, truths, love, security, all of those things came from the family, and discipline as well. All of those things came from the family. And so that when they went off to public school, then they could just focus on learning. But what has happened, because we've got such fractured and dysfunctional families, that the public schools have become places where kids now have to be disciplined. They have to be taught basic values. And so this is why the public school system is even more dangerous to kids today than it was, 50 or 40 years ago,
That's right. It's become the whole culture because the people, we parents dump the kids there and say, raise them. It's not good for our country. It comes back to the parents. It comes back to the family. That's the root of it all. We must restore that. And as we do, we restore them intellectually to be self-governing. We're not attempting to escape from realities or intellectual debate. In fact, we want to bring these kids to the place where they can think for themselves, where they can read well, where they can think well, where they can lead in the next generation. And that's not being taught in the vast majority of schools. So if we will do it right, starting with our own families and continue to grow this, there's no doubt that there are millions of very concerned families out there right now, what's going on in our country.
I want to end with something that is a quote from Benjamin Franklin that I thought was really, really powerful. I mean, and most people cite Benjamin Franklin, like you say in the book, as a deist. And so when people say a deist, it means, he just believed in God, but he didn't believe in Christianity and all of those other kinds of ideas of, divine scripture and all that. I would challenge anybody to believe that, just reading this quote, and this was, I believe, at the Constitutional Convention when they were trying to create a constitution. Is that correct?
Yes, they had a big impasse after 2 months.
Yeah,
and they were breaking up, and he spoke to them. Yes.
And he said, and they were almost going to like go home. And when you go home in that era, people just don't fly back. It takes a long time to gather the people together. But he said, God governs in the affairs of men. And if a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it possible that an empire can rise without his aid? We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this. This is Benjamin Franklin speaking. He quotes Jesus. He quotes from the Old Testament. This is not a man who did not believe in the Christian foundation of the world.
Oh, he did. Absolutely. He said, you know, the man that brings in original Christianity, said, will be the greatest man in the history of the world. He understood the Christian principles were the answer.
Yeah,
he struggled with deism at different times in his life and all this, but in reality, he knew it and brought it out right there at the convention. And they did come together, and bring about this great document a month later. So it's a wonderful thing, and people know in their hearts the history is proven to be true that we need to come back to God. It's just at that time. That's why we call it the American Campfire Revival. Basically, we just want in our homes and in our besides our fireplace or our swimming pools, wherever we are, to begin to learn and pray and rebuild our country peacefully from the bottom up.
Yeah.
by learning to trust God and not trust the government to become our overlord. That's going to be key.
Very, very, very key. And I just want to leave people with this thought too, is that, you know, and you talk about this in your book, that there are basically two narratives kind of going on about, you know, what really is the narrative for humanity and the world. Really. I mean, if the Bible is true, then the Bible is the world's grand narrative of who we are and what we're about, what is their purpose in life, and how we should lead our lives. Yeah. And if it's not true, then then it's everybody for themselves, basically. So, but I want to thank you so much. The book is called The American Covenant. And once again, where can people get access to the book and to the American Revival Campfire?
Yeah, so you can go to all of that. Just go to worldhistoryinstitute.com or americancovenantbook.com. But just go to worldhistoryinstitute.com and you'll see all kinds of materials and our movie there and information about Kirk and the Campfire Revival. So it's available right now.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Gloucester. And thank you so much for being on Lighthouse Faith Podcast.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
And thank you all for listening. My name is Lauren Green. Have a blessed day.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.